Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Willow, Alaska, and on the line we have our host for the Gypsy Musher, Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. Hugh, how are you?
Doing been a busy week. Just got back from Tanana and just hanging in tow for a few days, running some of the burn dogs that I didn't take with me, and then I'll be flying out of Anchorage here a few days and heading for South Dakota. So busy time of year. But it's fun. I get to share time on the trail with the dogs, but then I get to go and share some with people about all my adventures along the way.
Well, you know, Hugh, we have a pretty bad connection. Let me put you on hold real quick, and if you will, can you call back in and call right back? I think we have a kind of a slippy internet connection, so give me a call right back, okay?
Will do.
All right. So this is Robert Forto. We're going to be talking to Hugh Neff today about his pretty much a week-long adventure on the trails from in the interior of Alaska to the village of Tanana. That's one of his kind of old stomping grounds. I look forward to talking to him about that. Also today we're going to talk about one of Hugh's favorite dogs. His dog, his name is Walter, what people are affectionately calling Walter's Warriors, the team this year. So we're looking forward to talking to him about that as well. Hugh is getting ready to travel down to South Dakota to do a school tour right before Christmas. I'm sure the kids will enjoy that in South Dakota as well as Minnesota. He's heading up to my old stomping grounds in Duluth, Minnesota, so that will be a good time as well. So we're going to bring Hugh back on. He's calling back in from Tok, Alaska.
Yeah, man.
All right, here we are. I think that's
How's
a better connection.
Better?
Yes, much better. So we're getting introduced here. We're talking about your about a week-long trip to the village of Tanana. I'm sure people are just dying to hear some stories. Let's talk about that a little bit.
You know, I do the usual. I stop in Eureka and hang out with Brent for a day and Kyla, and they are at Susan Butcher's old place, Dave Monson's place, and I actually lived there many moons ago for a winter when I was working for Ray Brooks there and his wife and kids, and I just loved that area. It's got a lot of history to it between Susan and Rick Swenson training there, so there's a special feeling to that part of Alaska, for me at least. And Brent ended up leaving from his place where I drove a little while down the road to Manly Hot Springs. And I actually took off right by next to where Joey Reddington lives. You know, one of the dog mushing's all-time finest mushers, whether it's sprint distance, whatever. If there's, you know, a musher you need advice from, Joey Reddington's definitely a guy I'd like to talk to. But I figured the dogs had already gone to Eagle, so they didn't really need to do a super long run. So I took off about 26 miles off the 100-mile run from that. So it was basically just a 70-mile run. The only problem was it was fresh, you know, a couple feet of snow on the trail and just really very slogging-like conditions. We weren't setting any speed records. But personally, I love this type of training on dogs, especially the younger dogs. I don't think the older boys or girls really need to have their bodies toned up as much. But those young dogs, it's a way to strengthen up not only their muscles, but their hearts as well. And that's why I call the trail the Heart Trail, because, you know, making it to Tanana from Manly, it might only be 70 miles by map or, you know, as the raven flies, but anybody who's been on the trail knows that that trail will test you every time. There's just a lot of hidden nuances to it, whether it be Fish Lake, you know, crossing a 4 or 5 mile lake in some pretty, you know, rough weather with usually windy, and then Hayes Slough always has a bit of overflow on it, which most dogs don't like to, you know, be running through water in the winter months, but, you know, it's part of Alaska. There's overflow everywhere, and you're definitely going to be seeing it in Iditarod and Quest, so might as well get them used to it in training as well.
So you were talking about some bad weather conditions. I know down here in Willow this past weekend, we had the big melt, and then we had quite a bit of snow and a little bit of rain. When you talk about bad conditions on the trail, kind of describe that a little bit on the sled. You know, you're out in the middle of nowhere, and the bottom sort of much falls out on you, you know, in the weather. So let's talk about that a little bit.
You know, that's why, you know, it's all about heart, man. Just imagine doing a 70-mile run knowing that the more miles you go, you're going to have to turn around and go right back over that same 70-mile, you know, gauntlet of mushy, thick snow that was so thick it was clinging to the sides of my sleds. It felt like an icebreaker, you know, like I was just breaking through the trail more than running across the trail. And it was cool, though, because when I got to Tanana, all my native buddies were like, you know, some of the stuff you do, there's no way special ops or, you know, the finest military could probably handle doing a trail like that, because not only does it take, you know, a little bit of grit and determination, but what it really takes is a dog that knows where they're going. And fortunately for me, you know, I go there every year. I lived in Tanana back in 98, and I go there every year as a way to go, you know, back to where my roots are at as far as, you know, learning how to run dogs. And so it was nice to have dogs that knew where they were going, you know, like Walter and Jewel and some of my, you know, veteran dogs. And that helps big time. Because you know that you got to have a nice front end to keep the mindset of the overall team performing at a good level, or else you get a few dogs that get a little bummed out and you're going to be, you know, camping out along the trail somewhere. But fortunately for us, it went well. Brent was great. I mean, he had Silver with him. If Iditarod folks don't know about Silver, he's a pretty amazing dog. And Brent obviously has an amazing bond with him. And watch those guys, how they communicate with each other out on the trail as we were searching for, you know, reflective marking. Because this ain't Iditarod. This ain't Quest. This ain't, you know, a lot of your racist people are all concerned about trail marking. And notably so for, you know, folks that are coming from all parts of the world. You don't want them getting lost out there. But this is native land out there we're cutting across, and they don't really they're not going to go out of their way to, you know, put reflective marking up because they know their land. And so there are bits and pieces of, you know, trail marker, whether it's some ribbing on a tree or a small little reflective device on a, you know, anywhere. But what happened this year is some of the tripods, there's so much snow in that area that they're almost covered up already. I mean, it was unreal how much snow was out there. And it's always an adventure. It definitely teaches you patience being on that trail, because it ain't about having a certain overall speed or, you know, being in too much of a rush. It's all about consistency and heart and just you can really look at it by watching the dog's aggression and how they're tugging at their lines. The dogs that really have that overall characteristic that is so necessary to, you know, be racing 1,000 miles. I mean, there's a lot of amazing athletic animals in Alaska and all over the world that can't necessarily go 1,000 miles because they really have to have that desire and that energy and the know-how on how to contain their energy and not push or pull too hard. A lot of your younger dogs, they're just going to want to pull too hard and they're not going to last that long. So this type of training, it's actually teaching them to slow it down a notch and to control that energy so you're going at just a good pace, you know, 50 miles out as you are right out of the starting gate.
So let's talk a little bit about the area where you were running. You said that that was the Susan Butcher's old place, and as well as a place that you hung your hat for a while. You know, Susan Butcher is one of the greats in this sport, and everybody that knows anything about dog sledding has heard her name. Do you have any stories about Susan and the area there that you could share with our listeners that may not have heard some of these unique tales?
It's weird, man. I never really talked to the lady. She's like Swenson or some of these folks. I just respect too much that I get too nervous around them, really, which people wouldn't believe that coming from UNF, but, you know, there's people that I idolize like that, like George Atla or some of those folks, and Susan was one of them. I just got nervous around her and really didn't want to stick my foot in my mouth, as I do so often. But whenever I'm walking around that area, you know, I go back and walk through the bit of her trails, and you definitely feel her presence there. And it's, you know, Rick was a little bit farther off the Eureka track. He was back ways from where she was at. But he definitely left his mark, and obviously the folks around there still talk about those guys. I saw her one time coming down the highway there with a bunch of loose pups. She had her typical, you know, pigtails and was flying down the road on her four-wheeler, and I was actually hitchhiking to go to Ivory Jack's to go see Hobo Jim play for the first time at Ivory's anyways. And her pups started coming flying at me, and I'm along the side of the highway, you know, trying to thumb a ride going towards Fairbanks. And right when she saw her pups coming at me, she like gave like this little, you know, war holler type deal. And those pups just turned and went on a beeline back for her. And she took a right and, you know, went on her way. So that was a pretty cool moment in time. And I definitely love that area, but you know, I'm not the only musher that's been on these trails. Charlie Bowling did it for years, and there's been a bunch of others, but I just love the area because it's stark. This is my history with the area. When I was back in Chicago, I had a lady who was the mother of a girl I was dating at the time give me a map of Alaska because, you know, even back then I knew I wanted to live up here. Anyhow, I took that map of Alaska and I drew a little heart in the center of Alaska, and then I had like a little wolf sticker that I put in the middle of that heart. And right in the middle of that heart, in the middle of Alaska, that wolf sticker went right onto Manly Hot Springs, where 10 years later, there I was traveling this trail. So that's why I sort of call it the Heart Trail. And the cool thing about that little wolf sticker that I put on in the middle of that heart was when I got to Tanana and started working for Lester Earhart, who's like I look at him as like my step native father, all the things he's taught me throughout the years. But when I got to his village, and I actually just went and did a talk at the school there, the Tanana school there, their high school and grade school, their nickname, their mascot is the Tanana Wolves. So that was pretty pretty good karma for me on that part. And that's why I like to go up there every year. It's a special place. It's tough times on the river in the Yukon River for the villagers. The economy is really hitting them really hard. And I lived there just over 10 years ago, and there were 650 natives living there now, and some white folks, and now it's down to about 250. So it's a rough economy. And if there's anything I can do throughout my career to help support the native folks that have supported me, you know, through my tough times and my learning experiences in Alaska, I'm going to do my best to do that, because for me, that's what Alaska is really all about, is getting out there and visiting with the folks out in the communities and the villages.
Let me go back to that map you were talking about. Did you know much about mushing or dog sledding at that point, or you were just knew you had to be here for some reason?
You know, it came and went. I vaguely knew, but you know, I just always liked hot springs. First of all, you know, I lived in Oregon and Washington for a bit, and I always liked checking out all the different hot springs. Being a musher, they definitely come in handy. That's why it's great what Brent's doing. Brent, in a way, just followed what my little dream, but he did it to another extent. I mean, he's been there 5, 6, 7 years now, tied up helping Dave out. And Brent's just an awesome kid to hang out with. His energy vibrates. And, you know, my life's been sort of a roller coaster lately. So to be around a guy who always thinks everything's so awesome and who's willing to, you know, he doesn't get too bummed when times are tough. You like people like that. And times have been tough for Brent, but in the opposite way of what you would think, he's actually getting too much snow. So while you guys were all getting all that rain down in your area, it's just been snowing like crazy in Tanana, Manly, in that area. Even though on my way back from Tanana yesterday and the day before, it was actually raining. So I did this trip with my buddy Jaime last year, a buddy from Puerto Rico who worked with me in Skagway, and we did that same trail last year. It was 40 below, and then this year when I came back a couple days ago, it was 30 above and raining. So quite interesting. That's the beauty of Alaska. It's the beauty of doing Iditarod or Quest every year, is you never know what Mother Nature is going to be, you know, showing, and that's why the adventure is never boring, that's for sure.
So you were talking about a 70-degree temperature change in just 1 year, and I know that's pretty common in Alaska for things to fluctuate as much as they do. How do you prepare for that when you're planning a trip like this? You know, you're preparing for everything, but you know, you're thinking it could be 40 below or it could be 30 above. How do you go about logistically preparing for something like that?
Yeah, that's half the reason I talked to my buddy Charlie Wright, and we're hoping to get a cache up there, a cabin or something in between Manly and Tanana, somewhere to store some supplies so we don't have to carry all this stuff, because I got about, you know, 40, 50 miles down the trail right before Fish Lake, and just realizing, man, I do not need all this fat I'm carrying. I stopped by the processor in Delta who has, like, beef and buffalo fat, and I got a bunch of fat, figuring the dogs would need it on such a big trip, and then it got so warm that what I really needed was more, you know, like fish or kibble or something to that effect. You really didn't need all that fat. So I definitely left Lester, my buddy, with a bit of extra food for his dogs to chow down on after I left. You always have to over supply yourself. Obviously, you don't want to run short on supplies, but that's, I know going into this trip, I'm always going nice and slow and steady on the way out. Then after I hang out in Tanana and visit for a few days, I know I'll be coming back with a fresh team with a light sled that'll be going a lot faster. And like 16 hours to go to Tanana, and then coming back, I think it was like 9 or 10 hours. So we're going at a much better pace, even though the trail is still really sloggy and lots of overflow. But it's a test, you know. Like I said, I'm not doing this to set any records. I'm doing this to train dogs. And I know a lot of people like to train dogs to get ready for races, but I look at it the other way. I do races so I can train dogs. I mean, I live to learn, and being out on the trail with the dogs, not only are you teaching them, but they're teaching you, and you're all learning from, you know, the environment. So it's the beauty of life. It never gets old around here.
So on our last show on the Gypsy Musher, you talked about your 340-mile trip from Toke to Eagle and back, and you went with a friend of yours named Jesse. And on this past trip, you were only going 70 miles, and you took another friend with you, Brent. What is the difference between the two? You know, because a lot of people listen to that show. Actually, you had more people listening to that show than any other. So how can you compare and contrast a little bit between the two? First off, it's a fourth of the way in terms of miles, but I'm sure the adventure is the same.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the difference between Brent and Jesse. And I'll tell you, man, between the both of those boys, I would say there ain't two other mushers I know, except for maybe Mr. Mackey, that have as much energy as those two kids do. I mean, those two are, they're quite a handful to hang out with, but I really enjoy it. Different style, more hills. The trail of Tanana, there's a few little, you know, hills, but nothing really that bad, just maybe 1,000 feet up at most, and then gradual descent down onto Fish Lake. But it's trail, and I did love the trip to Eagle. Was awesome, but to be on the trail, you know, anybody who runs dogs, you'd like, I prefer to be on a tight, twisty trail where you're more like on a roller coaster ride than on a long, smooth, level, you know, road. It's beautiful, you know, wherever you're at, but being on a trail, it's more enjoyable, and there's a more of a starkness, I think, maybe to the Fish Lake area before Tanana. There's a vibe there. If you have, not too many mushers have been on this trail. It's not like a very easy to get there, first of all. It's about 3.5-hour drive just from Fairbanks to Manly, depending on weather. And but we would eventually like to get a race going there, hopefully next year. We'd say this every year, and we were able to do it, you know, with Fort Yukon, and hopefully we'll be able to do it next year. I would really like to set up a race and possibly go from Eureka to Tanana and finish up in Manly, and hopefully we can, you know, dedicate it to Susan Butcher or the folks of that region that, you know, they used to have a big race there called the Tour de Minto, and it would be neat to get some action up there. I think if, you know, Joe Reddington was all about getting mushing going for the villagers, and I think this is a chance now for us modern mushers to give our you know, effort back to, you know, helping, you know, make things interesting and exciting in a village system for a couple of weeks by having a race come through. I think they'd really, from what I've heard talking to people, they'd really be into it.
So if we could just backstep just a little bit, Hugh, we have a question from one of our listeners, and you were talking about feeding fat and the difference in temperature and things like that. Can you explain that a little bit, why it's good or bad to feed at a particular temperature with the sled dogs?
First of all, I'm not a scientist. If you really want to know the exact science, I'd ask Sebastian or Martin or, you know, somebody with that more mind thought. But just plug, you know, it's not going to go through their digestive system as smoothly, and their gut's going to get a little bit thicker and sluggish, and that's why you're going to want more water in their system when it's warm out. Even though they do get water from fat, my buddy Jerry Willemitzer was always telling me that. He's had races where his dogs would just eat fat, and they hydrated themselves fine. They chew a lot of snow on the trail. But I'd just say that they might not have as smooth a time digesting the fat in the warmer weather. That's why in warmer weather it's more strictly maybe a soaked kibble mixed with meat or perhaps fish. But I prefer to do fat either while they're resting for a while so it can get to their system, or early morning hours. I wouldn't be giving fat at all during the middle of the day.
And, is there a cutoff temperature, Hugh, for that fat to be processed or
not?
No,
not really, because you got to factor in the wind effect, you know. But everything's so relative, you know. So, I mean, for me, coming from Toke, hot is maybe 0 degrees out. Where other places like Minnesota, maybe zero is a little, you know, not bad at all. But I would say anything above maybe 10, 15 above, I wouldn't be giving too much fat.
So we're getting back to, you're talking about the races and things like that up there in the Hot Springs area. You know, it sounds to me like next year you're going to be a race governing organization. You wanted to start that race there on the highway. Now this time you want to start one there in the Hot Springs. What the heck else is going on?
I'm a dreamer, man. I'm a dreamer. I just see all this beautiful land, and I'm so, you know, blessed to be able to do what I do, and I just want to have others see the beauty of it as well. And it's like my buddy Mike Williams I was talking with on Facebook yesterday from the Bethel area, and he was saying, you know, the dogs deserve to get out there and be tested and, you know, check out, you know, the competition and see how their dogs are. And it should, you know, be a competition but also a celebration too. And it's tight with the economy, that's for sure, and it's tough getting around, you know, with fuel being as it is and all that, but I'm just having to be cheap with everything else, and that's just the way my world is. I just, you know, put everything into the dogs, or at least try to. That's why I'm doing the school tour, because you know, I enjoy sharing our adventures, what we're up to, and I think people really get off on knowing that there's actually humans that still sort of are, you know, nomads, not using mechanized engines all the time to get around.
Speaking of school tours, you took time out on this recent trip to visit the kids there in Tanana. How did they receive you? I know they have, you know, probably a lot of their forefathers, their ancestors grew up on dog sleds. What was the response from the village kids?
It was cool. Their teacher actually was a student of the lady who is the president of NEA, which sponsors me. Her name is Barb Van Gyck, and so Ginger was their teacher, and she's actually from Shaktiluk, you know, which is on the originally, and she married a fellow from Tanana. But, you know, Shaq is on the Iditarod Trail, so that was sort of cool to, you know, chat with her about, you know, Palmer, Sagunik, and some of the folks from her village that we get to go through. It's a very stark area on the coast of Alaska. But the kids, you know, I don't know if folks in radio land or internet land know much about dog mushing. Is everybody knows about Iditarod, but on the village system, sprint mushing is much more of a historical, you know, race than Iditarod. It's been going on for years amongst the villagers with each other. There's numerous different village championships and spring carnivals, and then you have like the North American and Ferrandi. And so, yeah, these kids, they know about mushing. I mean, believe me, those kids are all racing already, and they're all, you know, in grade school. They're doing little 5-10 mile races every few weeks or in the springtime. But it doesn't mean I can't share my experience of what it's like coming from a city and being a part of their culture. And just I'm always just trying to teach kids to sort of think outside of their element and look at the world as, you know, bigger overall view, and not only to get out and explore the world, but I really think by getting out and exploring things, you're actually learning a lot about yourself too. So that's what I'm trying to teach them. My concern with them is just talking to some of the elders in the village when I was there in Tanana, is just a lot of these kids, you know, it's Twitter world, and you know, they're all wondering what Lindsay Lohan's up to or what the latest fashion is, and a lot of these young kids don't even know who George Atla is, you know, and he's like the Michael Jordan of dog mushing. And, I almost think they should have a mandatory dog mushing class that kids have to take, or some in Alaska. I think mushing and the outdoor lifestyle should always, at least in the rural communities and villages, should always, the history of Alaska should be, you know, something that high on the list of what these kids need to learn about, where, you know, where their roots are and where they come from. And a lot of the villagers are doing their darndest to make that happen, but sometimes these kids' attention is set in different directions. They're more interested in playing basketball or whatever.
So in one of these more remote villages, and it's not the remote, the remotest village by any stretch of the imagination in Alaska up there, but what do you think a lot of these kids' goals are? You know, here they are in grade school and they're living in this little village. What do a lot of these kids end up going to do after they graduate high school? Do they stay in the villages? Do they move on? What happens to a lot of these kids?
It's tough, man. You know, they have a system. They have chiefs and mayors and stuff like that. A lot of the chiefs nowadays are actually ladies. And a lot of different places I've been to, the women are actually trying to revitalize their language by trying to teach children words in their native tongue. Some of it's even over the radio. But it's the $10 million question. And hopefully with my, you know, people think I want to win Iditarod, but realistically I'm more interested in being a great Alaskan than a great all-time race champion, whatever that means. I want to be somebody who makes their mark and does something good for the great land. And if I can do anything to help spur the economies of the native villages, I'm all about that. I just going around and talking to different folks, from what I can tell, you know, hopefully what might be able or of service to villagers is obviously the internet and a way for villages to promote themselves, maybe promote their crafts or what have you. Because a lot of the kids move out. They go to UAF or UAA, you know, one of the colleges in the cities, and there's probably going to be more chance for work, and there's obviously more to do in the cities than the quiet village scene. You don't see as much, you know, trapping going on. It's weird, man, because I read a book called 10,000 Miles by Dog Sled when I was first getting into mushing by a fellow named Archdeacon Hudson Stuck, and he traveled around Alaska over 100 years ago, and went from village to village, you know, preaching the good news and seeing how folks were getting along and all that. He was a missionary, and he predicted 100 years ago in his book what is actually happening today. And that's about how the culture was going to lose its vibrancy because of, you know, it's going to be modernized by civilizations from other parts of the world. And it's happening now. And it's sort of sad to see. But, you know, we'll see what happens as far as it's up to those kids that are going to the cities to get a better education or to, you know, see the world. It's up to them to come back to, you know, where they're nurtured and give back to their people, and hopefully it'll happen, because it's tough times nowadays, and my hat's off to all these people that are staying in the villages to keep things to keep the ship afloat, because, you know, it's Alaska's an expensive place and it's a rough economy, so it's a tough place to, you know, just survive, let alone, you know, thrive.
Speaking of school tours, here this week you're going to be heading down to South Dakota, right there, Rapid City, right there at the foothills of the Black Hills. I remember going to races there. One of my first races that I ever received a check out was called Black Hills Race to the Gold, a little mid-distance race. So I love that area. Michelle and I, my wife, were just there this past spring revisiting all that area. So I'm envious of you heading back there. What are you going to tell these kids that are pretty much living there on the plains, and you know, there you look one direction, there's nothing to the next direction, the other direction is one of the most beautiful sights in the world of the Black Hills. What are you going to tell these guys at this school this week, Q?
Oh, you know, I'm going to tell them that, you know, I've driven to that area as well. I drove back from Alaska and went through the reservations there many moons ago, and I'm a native wannabe. I just learned about the native lifestyle through Boy Scouts, and I read a lot of those John Nearhart books, and just Black Elk Speaks, and you know, there's just a lot of amazing history to that area. You know, Wild Bill and Calamity Jane and all that, Deadwood. I just try to share, you know, my passion for life and for learning. And a lot of my school talks, to tell you the truth, I call them shock and awe. And not only do I want to sort of let these kids know that they can be a lot stronger than they think they are, if they listen to their minds think more and they allow themselves, they want to evolve. I mean, that's what I've been trying to do. I'm not really doing it that quickly, but I'm always trying to, you know, pick up something new each and every day. But I really like to tell animal stories, and I know the kids love to hear about the dogs, and I talk a lot about, you know, my main leaders, Annie or Walter or what have you. But they love the animal encounter stories, and that's when I hopefully have this book out by Iditarod time. A lot of that book's going to be about the animal encounter. So let me tell you my animal encounter from coming back from Canada 2 days ago.
Sure.
It's the classic. I was coming over a hill. It was pitch black. It was just outside of Tofty, which is an old mining place. There's some cabins down in the bottom there. And as I crested the hill, I saw three glowing pairs of yellow eyes 20 feet away from me coming towards the dog team. And they were cresting the hill on the other side, and it was three wolves, dude. And I'm not kidding you. They're like 20 feet away, and my leaders just shot off like a rocket towards them. And all three of those yellow eyes just went in different directions and flew off into the trees. And it was perfect timing because, you know, we're getting up into the hills of outside of Manly. So it gave the dogs that little extra enthusiasm. But it's moments like those where, you know, life on the trail might be boring here and there for a little bit, but usually there's something exciting just waiting for you. So it was a pretty awesome experience. And
that
a nice
cool
way to finish things off on a nice note.
That is cool. You know, we spend so much time on the back of the dog sled, and you're just kind of just plugging away mile after mile. And when something like that happens, it just really makes your day and makes the dog's day and makes that adventure so much more fulfilling. At least to me, I'm sure it does to you. Any other stories?
Oh, I'd much rather see a couple of wolves than a moose, dude.
Oh yeah, trying to set a hook in the ice with a moose 15 in front of you with a bunch of barking dogs is a little tough to do, isn't it?
Yeah, the dogs get even more amped up. But it was cool. I had Walter up there and Jewel, and typically with wolves, the dogs actually get a little quiet, and they know that there's a predator probably staring them down. So their dogs will look at maybe, you know, like a fox or coyote and just sort of stare them down. But with the wolf dogs, a lot of times they try not to even look that way. So, but yeah, it was pretty neat, and it was a great workout. Didn't have to carry a dog in the sled or anything, and just went at a nice little mellow pace, and they're all eating good and everything. We were talking about fat earlier. I might mention this real quick. So I was running low on snacks because of the heat, and so I snacked three times on the way back from Tanana. The first time was a fish. Then once I got across Fish Lake, I wanted to give them a little bit of a reward because it's a pretty harrowing experience going across a 5-mile long lake, and you know, the lake's probably a few miles wide, and to test for the dog's, you know, mental and capabilities and their will. And when they got across, I gave them a nice little meat snack. The amazing thing is, you know, with the dog's telepathy, that these dogs, I just let Walter have his head going across the lake. I didn't give him any commands at all. And that dog took me right across the lake, no trail, pretty good wind going, except right in the middle it was a little calm, but it was windy the rest of the time. And when we got to the other side of the lake, to where the portage was to go through the trees, he was only off by about 150 feet from that portage. And I thought that was pretty amazing, because I've spent a night out there before camping on that lake because I couldn't find the portage. But and then the third time, getting back to the fat, I was snacking after the wolf encounter. I stopped and gave him a quick little snack, and all I had left was fat to snack with. So in that circumstance, it being above 20 degrees, what I did was I just cut their snack smaller. And I didn't give them such a heaping quantity of fat. And that's a way to get around the whole fat issue. So, yeah, you can still feed fat a little bit in warm weather. You just don't want to be giving too much of it, I'd say.
So to finish up here, Hugh, you wanted to share the sled dog of the week. We do this every show. Excuse me. And you already mentioned a little bit of the story about the dog we're going to talk about, Walter. He's been dubbed Walter's Warriors on Facebook. I just saw right before we aired here.
I agree.
We have Annie's Armory and Walter's Warriors now. So let's talk a little bit about Walter.
Yeah, that's the theme for this year's team. Last year was Annie's Armory. This year's Walter's Warriors. And Walter, you know, Walter Newman, who's best friends with a buddy of mine, Lester Earhart, passed on a couple of years ago. And before he passed on, Walter Newman, who's a native fella, told everybody that I named my main leader after him. And I didn't have the heart to tell him that I actually named Walter after Walter Payton, my, you know, football player that I grew up with in Chicago. But I didn't really care because it's Walter Newman. And Lester really honors me, because in Lester's house, you can imagine, I go to this native establishment out in the middle of nowhere, and I go into to Lester Earhart's house, and Lester's one of the greatest dog men of all time. And above his TV is a picture of me and Walter Newman shaking hands and talking to each other a couple of years ago after I came in second in the quest. And it was just an honor to think that, you know, some white kid like me has his picture up in a famous native guy's wall out in the middle of Alaska. It made me feel good about how far I've come. That means more to me than any trophy I've gotten, that's for sure.
Cool.
But yeah, Walter is a pretty amazing boy. He's a big boy. He's about 65 pounds. I remember I had him in Iditarod a few years back, and Joe May, Iditarod champ, looked at Walter and said, "Now that's an old school dog." And he's a big boy, and he's all heart. He's out in the truck with me right now. He's hanging out waiting for me, and we're going to do a little shopping in town. But he's loose in the yard all the time, and he rarely is more than 5 to 10 feet away from me. He's just like my little blanket or whatever, you know. He just follows me around everywhere. And, yeah, he's a special dog. His mother, Colby, who's also Annie's mom, Walter's Annie's brother, she's a Lester Earhart dog, and she's featured in Mushing Magazine article that we were in a few months ago. So, pretty amazing guy. He's going on 7, and I think he's done 8,000-mile races already. And he's all heart, and he's a character. I like to team him up either with my new guy, Sport, who I got from John Baker, or else I'll put him with Jewel or one of the smaller girls. And he's great for training up younger dogs, because he'll just sort of give a little tug on that leader line and make that dog go wherever he goes.
And we showcased Jewel a couple episodes back, and if people want to hear about that, make sure you listen to some of these previous shows that we've done here on Gypsy Musher, because the stories just don't end after we're done today. They continue on as we're going through this adventure together. I know you mentioned on Facebook today that you're at your next checkpoint, which is what you're calling your home base right now, Tok, Alaska.
Yeah.
You're getting ready to head down this way to Kinnick and you know, kind of my old area here in Willow and whatnot this next week, and then down to the States. You're a busy guy. are most mushers that are planning for Iditarod and Quest and whatnot doing what you're doing, or they're, you know, their minds are 10 feet in the snow right now?
I think we can all agree that most mushers think I'm a little whacked in the head. But, you know, I didn't come here to be most mushers. I came here to be Hugh Neff, and I might be a little bit different, but I'm trying to do good in the world, and that's really what my mission's all about. So, to be quite honest, I'm financially not doing amazingly well, and that's part of the reason I do these school tours, is to make money so I can race. So I'm going to be, and that's why I sell my hoodies and all that. I don't even really know how many mid-distance races I'm going to be able to afford to do this year, so I'd at least like to do a couple, but we'll see how things go on the school tour as far as that goes. But I'm not doing it because I'm wanting to make, you know, lots of money. I'm doing it because I think we've got a good thing going here, and I enjoy putting smiles on kids' faces, whether they're 8 years old or 80 years old. And it's fun, but it's a workout, man. I mean, I hope when people read my stuff on the internet or listen to me on these talks we do, I hope they don't think that this is all like Disneyland here, because it's quite a grueling schedule I'm trying to keep, but it's a passion. It's something I feel like I need to do, because I've had people that helped me out my early years in Alaska, and I wouldn't have survived with a lot of my older Vietnam vet friends, or, you know, some of the folks in Fairbanks that kept an eye out for me over the years, the Earharts and folks like that. So it's incumbent for me to give back to Alaska, because that's really what, to me, people can call Alaska, you know, like a big state, but for me, being Alaskan is more a state of mind, and it's how you approach life. And I always want to approach life with a keen eye on, you know, doing my best to live up to expectations. And we're getting there. It's just it's been a workout, that's for sure.
I think you're doing a great job, and I'm sure your fans would second me on that 110%. Hugh, what's going to happen at the beginning of the year? I know you're going to be back in Alaska shortly thereafter Christmas. What's up on the trail? You know, what's the next adventure you got planned, if anything?
I got so many young dogs, man. I just noticed that John and Zoya's race is the day after I get back. So if I could somehow swing it, I might go and do their race. It's called the Gin Gin. A lot of these super big races, with not super big, but where there's a lot of dog teams, I'm not really into that whole scene. I don't know if I really want to go mush with 60 other dog teams out there. That's not really my style. Obviously, if I did ride, but for a shorter race, I have so many young dogs that I don't want to shell shock them with all the action everywhere. So I'm thinking I prefer to do a race, say, like the Gin Gin or maybe the Kinnick, or I think there's another race, the Northern Lights, and a few others that I'm sort of keeping an eye on. But a lot of it has to do with finances, and I'd love to go to races like Bethel and do the Cusco 300, but that's a little out of my price range right now, so we'll just have to see how things go. But one way or another, I'm going to get the dogs out there and get them tested a little bit. I don't expect them to, you know, win any of these races, but I want them to see what the whole scene's about, you know, some of these younger dogs.
And a lot of the Iditarod guys, Yukon Quest guys, they enter some of these races not to win, not to, you know, to be the best, but to just test out those young dogs to make sure that they are ready for the spotlight of the Iditarod or the Quest and that sort of thing. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. And it's an adventure. And, you know, most of us are all good friends with each other. We've been through the rigors of the trail throughout the years, so it's good to visit and all that. And, you know, how do you beat traveling through, you know, Denali Highway or, you know, Sheep Mountain or down in Reddingtonville in the Kinnick area. I mean, wherever you go, Alaska is beautiful. So even if you're going to do a 10-mile race, if there's an opportunity and you're in the area, you should get out there and try to do it. That's the way I'm looking at it. So hopefully I can make some of these races. I'm going to try my best.
We're looking forward to it. Hugh, are you going to call in from the road next time, the true Gypsy Musher tradition?
Oh, yeah, man, I'll definitely look you up either from I'm thinking Duluth, Minnesota.
There you go.
If I can find some time to squeeze in there, we'll give you a buzz from where you're originally from.
There we go. I was not originally from there, but I lived there for quite a while. I look forward to hearing some stories from my old stomping grounds in Duluth. Hugh, we'll talk to you again real soon. I'm sure that your listeners have questions, and they'll talk to you on Facebook as well. GypsyMusher.com, the site is up, and some of the older shows are there as well. So make sure you guys visit that, GypsyMusher.com, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us all there. Hugh, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk again soon, okay?
All right. Happy trails, my friend.
Take care, man. Goodbye. And this is Robert Forto on behalf of our co-host, Hugh Neff. See you guys next time. Goodbye.